Hi, everyone. My name is Dustin Elliott, and welcome back to another episode of this Y2 podcast mini-series. Each week, I try and answer a simple but important question. How can we ask better questions to live better lives? Here on the Y2 podcast, I answer that by bringing you a range of dedicated episodes where I break this concept down into bite-sized but thought-provoking and tactical episodes designed to help you ask better questions, pulled from industry experts, science, philosophy, as well as my own tried-and-true techniques. I also find and interview a range of industry-leading professionals who all depend on asking good questions in order to do their work, from police detectives, journalists, scientists, medical professionals, and many more to glean the lessons and techniques they use to successfully do their jobs and help you ask better questions along the way. As always, I want to take a quick minute and thank the Y2 Podcast sponsor, YZ. YZ is an easy-to-use online training software that makes it so simple to create and deliver online learning. The YZ platform is very flexible, and you can use it to automate a whole range of tasks in your business. For example, you can manage all of your employee training, train customers and partners in your products, track licenses and qualifications of your staff, create and sell online courses, capture more leads with free online courses, and so much more. Make sure you jump over to their website, yz.com, that's W-Y-Z-E-D.com, to check out some videos and even get started with your own 14-day free trial. Remember, if you like today's episode and you want to hear more, make sure you subscribe to the Y2 podcast, wherever you find your podcasts, so you don't miss out on new episodes as they come out. And of course, I would love if you can leave a 5-star review if you haven't already. Make sure you jump over to the Y2 podcast website, projecty2.com, where you can subscribe to our mailing list to get weekly topical articles, resources, as well as a range of additional content not released on the Y2 podcast, all around helping you ask better questions to live better lives. Now, today's guest is Narelle Fraser in part 2 of her interview. If you haven't heard part 1, I do recommend you go back to her previous interview to get caught up on some of the details. But just really quickly, let me reintroduce you to Narelle. Narelle was a member of the Victoria Police for over 27 years, 15 of those as a detective at the Rape and Homicide Squads and Missing Persons Unit, but dedicating much of her career to investigating child abuse and sex offenses. Narelle has received many awards during her successful career and has a reputation as a dedicated, meticulous, and passionate investigator. She's worked on some incredibly high-profile crimes throughout her time and has really stared death and trauma in the face throughout her career. As I mentioned in part 1, if you are really intrigued by Narelle's story and you want to hear more in terms of exactly what she did from the day-to-day in many of these high-profile cases, I really recommend that you check out a few of her interviews done by the wonderful team over at Australia True Crime Podcast. It's really easy. You can either search for Australia True Crime or you can just search Narelle Fraser's name wherever you find your favorite podcast episodes, and from there you can dive in. But with that being said, let's get to part 2. How do you go about checking your biases as much as possible at the door and not having all the confirmation bias and mm-hmm. all those other sorts of things bleed through? How do you approach that from a personal sense?
The only way you can deal with bias is if you know you've got the bias. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, I know I have a bias against, say, scout leaders. Now, I'm not saying that every scout, there's 99% of the scout leaders out there are great people. Mm-hmm. However, I know that when somebody says to me they're a scout leader, something happens within me, because every scout leader that I've interviewed has been a suspect for a sexual offence. Mm-hmm. So I have this bias about, for instance, scout leaders.
That becomes your reality, because when you interact with that, it's yes. these sort of times, experiences.
But... And so if a scout leader came into the interview room, I know that I have a bias. So if I know I've got the bias, I can put it aside, because I can't do my job properly if the bias comes out, because mm-hmm. it will show.
Yeah.
It'll show by the tone of my question, by the way I ask it. I might come across as a bit of a smart ass, you know, with my tone. I think it's a very, very dangerous thing to not recognise your biases. You know, I have, I'm a Richmond supporter. I have a bit of a bias against Collingwood supporters. No, I'm a joke. But, you know, when you've got to be able to recognize your bias.
So just being aware of it, recognizing it when it's permeating, or to reflect on what your own thinking and going, oh, is that bias? I may be a little bit more measuring it against that kind of thing.
It sounds easy. It doesn't. We're making it sound very easy. It's a very difficult thing to do, but you will not be a good investigator if you don't question anyone if you don't recognize that we all have influences in our life that influence the way we think.
Mm-hmm.
I've been brought up differently to you. My mum always taught me never to talk about in public about politics, about sex, your sex life, and also about how much money you get.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime anyone says anything to me about, oh, how much money did you get for that? You can't ask that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we are, and it's good to be able to recognize, it's important to be able to recognize that the other person across from you has biases as well.
Yeah, a completely different set of biases, but their own sort of filters of things you're saying that you're thinking this is fine, but they're going,
Yeah, they might think all cops are bastards.
Yeah.
All cops are out to get me, they're going to bash me, you know, that sort of stuff. But I think it's to understand that not me as the interviewer, yes, I have biases, but to also recognise other people do have.
Mm-hmm. I think that's important too. And I think something you said I want to go back to there for a moment is that they'll have their own biases about the situation. So in that case, all police are bastards kind of thing.
Yep.
But if I think about the different types of situations which we'll find ourselves in terms of questioning, I think of a workplace investigation. Something's happened and the manager has to ask questions. So that it's probably pretty evident to many of those situations that the person's being asked questions for a reason. There's been X incident or something's happened or there's been a claim.
Yep.
And that person's going to probably put an immediate thought of, okay, this person's out to get me, or this manager's an asshole, or something like that.
Yep.
So being able to put yourself in their shoes, kind of in terms of what we talked about before, but connecting with them, but at least acknowledging what sort of baggage that person might be bringing in, and doing your best, I guess, to identify that and deal with that. And I suppose that's largely a part of the rapport building phase kind of thing. And like you said earlier, like, I'm here to do this. This is the process, you know, the language and all that stuff, trying to strip away some of their biases as well, too.
Yeah. And another big thing I've learned is that unless you actually have been, let's say, sexually assaulted, it's not a good idea to say, I understand.
Mm.
Oh, yes, I know. You don't know, so you don't say that.
So don't try to pretend, I'd imagine, too, really.
No, no. I often will say something like, you know, I cannot imagine how you are feeling, but I will do anything I can to help you, you know, so I'm not using, I can't imagine, rather than I under, you know, oh yes, I know, you know, you got no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the, another thing is about asking the question types that you ask. The peace process is what police use now. It goes back to, it's called peace. I'm going to make a fool of myself here because I've got to remember. But peace is planning and preparation. Engage and explain, which is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I talked about planning, you've got to do everything you can. That's the last step, is going to get your crook. Engage and explain. That's engage with the person, explain what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. P-A. What the hell's A stand for? P-E-A. Account. So you allow them to give their account. No interruptions. Like you let them go.
Yeah.
To give them an opportunity. C is conclude. So paraphrasing. So what you've said is, you said blah, 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 and then this happened, and that's where they'll go, oh, no, I didn't mean it that way. It's actually around, oh, okay, and evaluate. Is E for evaluate, is to evaluate your interview. So the only way you're going to learn about where you mucked up or where you went really well is to evaluate. You listen to your interview.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people do that, or they didn't years ago. But when you listen, you can hear yourself go, okay. Like, and you think, oh, my God, how many times did I say you know?
Yeah.
Or So it's very, very important to evaluate. But the way to allow them to give their account is to ask open questions. If you start off an interview asking closed questions, you're going to get a yes, a no. You know, that's like,
yeah.
Did you do it? Well, no.
You're not going anywhere very fast, and you're, I'd imagine, having to force the conversation because you're going through this binary subset of questions, which is going to take forever.
Mm. Yeah. So the way to get people talking is obviously to ask open questions. So it would be something like, can you tell me everything that I'm here about? We've had a statement from, a woman that said you stole her purse. It happened at Chadston yesterday. Can you tell me everything about what happened yesterday at Chadston?
Mm-hmm.
So you get them and you say, I want you to tell me everything from the start to the finish.
Yeah.
So they can't actually say yes or no to that. So then you will often get them to go back and you'll say, that's really interesting, thanks. Because most people will say, I saw a woman with a purse, I saw it on the table and I took it and I left.
Yeah.
That's their account. So what you do is you go back a second time, a second recall, sort of. Now, look, that's great what you told me, thank you very much. But there's some more information in there. I'm interested in, could you tell me from the start to the finish again? But this time, can you go from everything you remember, from the very start to the... Oh, okay, so then you hear about, well, I drove my car there,
yeah.
I dropped my kids off at school and I was running out of money and I didn't have any and I saw this woman's purse and she went into Suzanne, so I found it. And so all of a sudden you've got all this information. So you would generally start off with a question like that. Tell me everything that happened.
Yeah.
Or what happened or, you know, something like that.
I think that was good too. I know when we chatted before, that was a real aha moment because I think of myself, if I'm asking questions, it's probably about a particular thing or a particular time or there's an objective I'm trying to achieve in that.
Yep.
And I thought about that after and I thought how many times I've gone for the jugular of that situation.
Yes.
435.
Yep.
What did this happen? What did you say to this person at this time? Mm. Right. And I thought, hang on a sec. There's probably a greater context that needs to be painted, even if it's just allowing them to get the conversation rolling. They're not starting at that critical junction. They're warming their way up to that particular moment, and even for their own benefit of understanding it in their head and being able to communicate it as well too. So starting before the thing you maybe necessarily want to drill in on, but the whole journey to take them across for that.
What we call it, Victoria Police are now... with their interviewing techniques, they're calling it the whole story. So, and it's a really powerful investigative technique because, as you said, you don't start off at 4:35 yesterday, tell me what happened then. What you're doing is you are trying to find out what happened before, what happened after, because often that can make a big difference. Like, yeah. They can tell you stuff that you didn't even think of. So we're calling it the whole story. So tell me everything. We don't just want to know about the offence because often the offence is not a one-off. Like you might find out from them telling the whole story that something else is, that something else has happened, there's all sorts of information.
There's somebody else and all of a sudden you're going, hang on a sec, there might have been something else that happened down there and you never bothered to put the two together necessarily.
Correct.
But trying to paint the pieces.
Yeah. So what we do is we get those open questions. What happened yesterday? Tell me everything from blah, blah, blah. And then they'll tell you. And then you drill down with your closed questions. There is a place you should only ever have in your repertoire open and closed questions. There is no place for leading questions, multiple choice questions or forced questions. Why? Because of that very small thing called admissibility. if you ask a leading question, your whole interview could then be, from a police point of view, it could be completely thrown out. So you only ever ask open and closed questions. And the closed questions are, you do that at the end of the interview when you do the, if they don't put in their whole story sort of thing, if they don't say what time they arrived at work, you would then say, now you said before that you arrived at work and blah, blah, blah. What time did you start? Did you arrive at work? What time did you leave? So that's where you drill down with your closed questions at the end, right, of their account. And another thing is with open questions, another process we use to help people expand is what's called the TEDS process. So you ask an open question. And they tell you a little bit. So then what you'll do is the TEDS, tell me, explain to me, describe to me, show me. So they'll go, the witness might say, look, I put my purse on the table. I went into Suzanne's. I came out and my purse was gone. You said before that, so this is how you'd go. You said before that you put your purse on the table and went into Suzanne's. Tell me more about that. So they'll say, well, I took the purse out of my bag and I checked it and to see if there was any money. I had $20. That was from a taxi fare home. And I just put it there because I saw a jumper in the window and I just wanted to have a quick look. So do you see, so not only have we got the purse, she's left it on the table, we have now got the fact that she's got $20 in her purse, the fact that she has to get a taxi. So there's so many more avenues that you've got. And if they say something about, oh, my purse was on the table, oh, look, it was in a cafeteria and there was a lady over here that she was, I don't know, she had feeding a baby. So what you can do with that is with your TEDS, you'd go, could you show me? So what they'll, and you'll give them a piece of paper and they actually write it out. That's what show me is means, really. Like to draw it.
Some visual components that are just describing.
Or you could say, can you describe for me everything about your purse? So you're starting to get this huge, this big, a proper picture. Years ago, we couldn't have, pardon me, we couldn't have given a shit about the colour of the purse or what was in it. But now we're starting to drill down and find out all this information, extra information you would never get.
And probably never think to ask or never think is important, I suppose, until you get it. And then that becomes ammo or fuel for... when you are sitting down with somebody and going this particular thing, or if you are going to court and have to prove it to somebody else, you can show and not just they had it, but you can go with that extra information and really drill down in such a really deep, intimate sense that only if you had asked the question and knew the information, you could be able to present that way.
Yeah. And also when, if somebody's talking to me about an offence that has occurred, I don't know if everybody could do this, but I actually put myself there. So when the person says, you know, say they were a rape, where they were walking along a dark alley and this guy came up from behind and he attacked me, what I will do is I'll, in my mind, I will be walking down the alley. And so as an interviewer, I will think of things like, so at the end where you ask the, you drill down, were there any lights on? Because I'm thinking to myself, if I'm down a dark alley, was there any lights? Was there anybody else there? And I'm thinking to myself, how would I feel? I'd be pretty bloody scared if I heard someone behind me. So I'll go to the witness, the victim. I'll go, so tell me how you were feeling. So I put myself there and then have all those. And you know when you said... the guy, you heard somebody come up behind you. Tell me more about that. Like, were they heavy footsteps? Did he come? You know, all those things, I put myself in that position. Some people might find that difficult because they don't want to actually, they might sort of actually become the, you know, like, but I can, I know where that line is, I suppose, but I find that very helpful to think, and, you know, how far away were they, to think of all these questions, and was there any visibility issues? Was it raining? Like, was it cold, or were you really hot, and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
I think that's important, though, too, because, again, I think something that I sincerely mean with utmost respect, but I hope people listening to this don't find themselves in your situation, incredibly traumatic in terms of sitting in those environments and dealing with victims and persons of interest, to get the terminology correct. But but even that, too, I think, again, of play things in my own life, if, again, if something were to happen and and you're trying to ask questions to ascertain, there's been an issue with a client of a business kind of thing, or a family member there might be a family situation kind of thing, and trying to, again, putting yourself in that situation to ask those critical things. Because from my experience is when people are trying to answer the questions as well, they're not always thinking about what information you need as well. I mean, they're thinking in their head, and they might give you a few bits of information, but you want to paint that picture and that broader picture. So things like heavy footsteps, they might not think of the description of it, but heavy footsteps can mean something, or a particular sound that they might not have any meaning to them in their realm of information. You might go, oh, that makes sense, because we've caught a guy with a big heavy chain, and that maybe is relevant kind of thing. So you can start to be able to ask these other questions, or provide some ways of what information you're looking, asking questions and describing what information to help paint that picture. But in that, I do want to ask one other area in terms of our chat today, and this has been something that is a little bit different in terms of your police work, but at the same time comes right back to, and you've alluded a little bit that at the end of your career, you hit a bit of a wall in terms of...
Oh, I hit a big wall.
Big wall, fair enough.
Yeah.
You hit a big wall. Yeah. I think that, you know, stress, and I'll speak quite broadly about this because I know it's a variety of ways, but in terms of that deep stress that can affect us deeply and physiologically is, I think, one of the most important areas of our life, because it has such serious consequences in terms of...
Well, it does. I lost my career because of it. Yep.
And I'm really curious for yourself, either to go back in terms of hindsight or from your training, what types of questions or approaches can we either be asking ourselves to make sure that we don't find ourselves in that situation?
Good question.
Or if we see somebody else who maybe, I think we all can kind of go, oh, gee, that person looks pretty stressed. If it's somewhat, it has signs. But what sort of things can we do in terms of questions or approaches to recognize and start to begin to address that in either other people or ourselves?
I think... first of all, it's very important to trust your own instincts. You know yourself better than anyone else, and you know your reaction to things, that if you are getting stressed about something, you'll know that. And my advice is to trust your instincts, to trust yourself, and not ignore those things, because that's what I did. Looking back, I probably knew that I wasn't managing too well, but I just made excuses, or I put my head in the sand and thought, I'll be fine. I'll just put it away and I won't think about it again. Well, what a surprise. You know, it comes back to bite you on the backside, which has happened with me. But so I'd say to trust your instincts. And I'm trying now to normalise, not stigmatise, mental illness. I have trouble saying that I have a mental illness myself, because I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress, PTSD. The stigma attached to any type of mental illness, we have to stop that stigma, because that is what is stopping people. I have so many police friends that will not seek help, because they are ashamed, as I was. There are so many descriptions for how I felt. When I knew something was wrong, I thought, oh, my God, everyone is going to think I'm weak. Everyone is going to think, like, I was humiliated. I was embarrassed. I thought I would be viewed as weak. You know, it was a terrible thing, and that's just the stigma. That's because of a stigma. And so I want people to help me to normalise mental illness. comes in all different forms. You know, like my mental illness, my PTSD, I've got now that got that under control. I will never be 100% free of all those traumatic things that I've seen in my career. And I have seen stuff that you just could not imagine, you know, somebody doing to somebody else, or I've just seen some terrible stuff. And it's still there, like any of us. Traumatic things happen, you know, when you break up with your girlfriend, or you find your boyfriend with someone else, or your husband, all sorts of things. You never really get over it, but you learn to put, you know, you learn to move on, I suppose. And I just think it's very important to recognise that, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a bit, like anxiety is actually more common than depression, which surprised me. You said something else there and I thought it was important that I tell people. You asked about, and that's right. So also have the conversation with somebody. If you are worried about your colleague at work, or your girlfriend, or your mum, or instead of going to someone else, oh, I'm a bit worried about Dustin, why wouldn't you just go to Dustin and say, you know what, are you okay? I've just noticed you might be a bit stressed lately. Do you want to go out for a drink, or I don't know, but recognise it and don't be embarrassed to say or feel awkward, because the person might just want somebody to say exactly what you're saying, okay? And you'd go, well, actually, I'm not. I feel like throwing myself off a bridge. Well, then you would think, thank God I asked, because then you'd get some help for him.
Yeah.
You know, so talk about it. Ask them. Don't think and go and say to someone else, I'm worried about such and such. You go and ask them.
Yeah, I think that...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does. And it's something that's important too that I want to touch on. And I know this will be something that'll come up much later in the podcast later on. But it's questioning your own beliefs as well, right? So in that instance, it's you know, you might go to somebody else and you might articulate that, right? Mm-hmm. Because you probably haven't approached that person because there's a belief that you have, which might be caused by you asking the question, right? Otherwise, why wouldn't you ask the question? It's a very organic process. Mm. But to go, why haven't I asked that person the question, I think is a really important question to ask yourself about, I should probably do this, but why aren't I? And it's a genuine question to ask ourselves in terms of our behaviors, our activities, our beliefs. We all have these sets of you know, I call it the operating system, right? We're not conscious of every decision we make. No. It's got the bias back to that.
No.
But being aware to question your own self from a place of curiosity, a place of genuine curiosity, to go, hang on a sec, why wouldn't I just go ask that person? Why didn't I go ask that person?
Maybe. Or you could go and speak to their supervisor, or speak to someone else to say, you know, I'm really worried about Narelle. Narelle has been, she's been very angry at work lately. Narelle's just not herself. And so the supervisor, at least do something rather than do nothing. And I've got to say too that sometimes you're so, I was so sick that I didn't know it. So I don't know, but maybe by somebody coming to me and saying, are you okay, Narelle? You seem to be real. It might actually bring me around a bit and think, God, you know, somebody's noticed. I better do something about it. But I had, when I look in my presentations, I actually, because now I present, about stress, and I'm a keynote speaker now. Who would have ever thought, hey? to think that I get paid to speak. Unbelievable. Anyway, I've lost my train of thought now. See, I was trying to be smart and I've lost my train of thought. What was I saying?
Just talking about speaking to supervisors and you necessarily might not have been aware of what you were going through.
That's right. In my presentations, I talk about the signs that I ignored. And when you see them up on a screen, you think to yourself, how could you ever ignore those signs that are up there? Like I'm talking, and I don't mind saying because it's out there, but I had really bad diarrhea because I was just getting so stressed. And I put that, you know, you can make excuses for anything.
Yeah.
But I ignored that. when I look back, I think, how could you ignore something? It was almost chronic. My anger was almost uncontrollable. I'm not an angry person, but I couldn't control my anger. I had these terrible flashbacks and triggers. I didn't know what they were at the time. I now know those terms. But I had the, like, when I look back, I think, how did I ever ignore them?
Mm.
And like I said, maybe if somebody had actually said to me,
yeah,
you know what, Narelle, you'd better do something. Who knows? I could be still doing the best job in the world. So just trust your instincts.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's again, definitely not a mental health expert. Don't play one on the internet. But just having that, again, that feedback mechanism in your life. And that's why, to me, questions, I'm so passionate about questions, something so nerdy and innocuous, because questions is that feedback loop. And it in my own life as well, you know, having that feedback loop and asking questions, and sometimes it's very retrospective. Sometimes I might think, wow, I've been a real bastard this last week. Why have I been such a bastard? And mindfulness and that practice for me of having that and asking that question and going, I don't know the answer, but I probably need to figure it out and I need to change that. So just having that in your life, or having other people play that role. Hey, are you okay? Are you doing okay?
Go to a professional every now and then, just to recalibrate, you know, just to get yourself back on track, and just to have a chat about something that's bothering you, like at work. Most workplaces these days have peer support and they have employee assistance programs and that. Take advantage of it. We had them in Victoria Police, but of course nobody would go because of the stigma.
Yeah.
It's just, we've got to stop that attitude.
Yeah. Let the professionals ask the questions in some cases. Yeah. Narelle, this has been such an absolute pleasure. I'll definitely make sure, because I think people need to hear more about, to put a lot of some of this in context too, some of the things you've experienced firsthand. I'll link to some other podcasts who have done an amazing job and where you've gone through and talked about the stories. This has been an absolute delight. I suppose for yourself today, where can people reach out to you and stay in touch with all the things that are going on? I know we were speaking earlier, you have a very exciting play that's been proposed as well. Where can people sort of stay in touch with yourself and all the things you're up to?
Basically through my website. Yeah. People book me for, you know, talks at conferences and corporate functions and that through my website, www.narellefraser.com.
Perfect.
But they can also get links to my Australian True Crime podcast. But there's a book coming out in the next 6 months of, not of mine, it's I am a chapter of it, about the impact of first responders of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the other victims of a crime is the ones that actually investigate it. And yeah, like you said, I've had this woman, she's going to do a play about my life. I'm still pinching myself, but anyway, hopefully people don't fall asleep.
I highly doubt if it's anything like we've talked about on your podcast and anything like we've talked about today. I've got very little doubt of that. But Narelle, I want to thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Dustin.
Hey everyone, just before you head off, I want to take another quick moment and thank you very much for joining me for today's episode. As always, a big thank you to our sponsor, YZ. Don't forget to check them out for your own free 14-day trial. Remember, if you like this episode and you want to hear more, make sure you subscribe to the YT podcast wherever you find your podcasts so you don't miss out on any new episodes as they come out. And don't forget to leave a 5-star review if you haven't already. Really appreciate that. Also, make sure you check out our YouTube page if you want to watch many of these episodes online. And of course, you can jump over to the Y2 Podcast website. That's projecty2.com, projecty2.com, where you can subscribe to our mailing list to get weekly topical articles and resources and a range of additional content not released on the Y2 Podcast, all focused on helping you ask better questions to live a better life. And with that being said, I'll speak to you soon.